All right, let's go ahead and get started. Our agenda for today is here. On the agenda, we're going to continue going through the proposal. Hopefully this will be the last week where we revise the proposal and effectively get buy-in for the proposal. Once we have buy-in, we're basically going to invite all the people that we wanted to interview, and we're going to try to interview them in parallel. Meaning that as quickly as we can get through the interviews with Brad Hill and Jeff Hodges and Karen O'Donohue and the ITF folks, as soon as we can get through those, we're just going to try to cram as much into the week of into the month of January as we can. So the order of operations this week seems to be we're going to refine the proposal and hopefully wrap that up today. We are going to contact all the people that have said that they're concerned about the work that we're trying to do or that we really want to get input from before officially starting the task force work. And then we will ratify the task force. Hopefully the interest group will, the web payments interest group will approve the work, seeing that we have broad buy-in, and then we will start constructing all the documents that we have in our work plan. Our work plan is the last agenda item for today. We are probably not going to get around to it just because we're going to just, based on the speed at which we're going, we're highly unlikely we're going to get to it today. Other administrivia, we do want some of the new participants in this call, if you haven't been on this call before, to just introduce yourself, but do so in IRC. Type out your name, the organization you're associated with, and why you're interested in this work. Don't do it until we get to the introductory portion, but just be thinking about that. Administrivia. I think we'll propose that this is the, or let me know what people think about this, but this will be the last call of the year, and we are just going to take a break until January 12th. So our next call will be January 12th, trying to respect the holidays and people's time off and giving folks downtime, because this group, among a number of other groups that the folks here are associated with, have been running pretty hot this year. So we want to give a nice little cool down period at the end of the year. So the proposal is this is the last week this year for calls, and the next meeting that we will have will be January 12th. That does not mean we won't do work, that get work done and set up calls and all that kind of stuff. It just means that we're going to have a bit of breathing room between now and January 12th. David Ezell, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I just wanted to sort of understand, do you want to, you know, we have an IG meeting on Monday. Are you feeling like we would be ready to vote on the task force on Monday so that it just becomes an independent?
So I think Ian said that he wanted us to get buy-in from the folks that have been kind of cranky about this work, and that the task force would not be started until we've at least had discussions with them. So the hope being that we can convince some of those people that we are actually working on something that's interesting and that they'd be interested in supporting. So folks that are on the fence, maybe we can get them to buy in. It really doesn't affect the output of the group. Like, you know, we're not operating officially right now, but we really don't need to be to collect a lot of the data that we need. But that's just, you know, that's just my opinion, and that was a request from W3C staff. If the group feels that we'd want to do something else, like, you know, ask the Web Payments IG to vote to ratify the task force next week, then that's something I think that's also on the table. Does anyone have any strong feelings one way or the other?
Well, since I guess I'm still unmuted, personally, I would like to see this become a task force because it's just a task force. It's not like a big deal. Do you have a time frame? Are you trying to get with those people? Do you think it'd be after the first of the year?
Yeah. So here's the other thing that I haven't had a chance to email you about, David, and that I really think that we should try and do. I think we should try and get this task force in front of the IG in San Francisco at the face-to-face. I think it would be a great, you know, way to kind of commingle, you know, the various people involved in the work. I know that the Web Payments IG is meeting on Monday. The Web Payments Working Group is meeting on Tuesday, Wednesday. And my hope was that potentially this group could meet, you know, before the IG met, but that would mean on Sunday. So I don't think that's really realistic. Maybe we could do it Thursday. There's another concern that maybe that's too much face-to-face in 1 week for folks that are going to attend all of those things. So there's a question around co-location, and if we're going to co-locate, we need to do it by the end of February. We need to make that, you know, we need to, the face-to-face is at the end of February, February 22nd, 23rd, around then. So we need to figure out if this group is interested in having a face-to-face that early, and it is a bit premature for this group. It's going to be really hard for us to get our material together in that time frame, but it, you know, I kind of view it as a missed opportunity if we don't. So to answer your question more directly, David, I think we're going to really try to parallelize as much as we can in January and shove as much work as we can in mid to end January and early February, and then kind of present what we find to the Web Payments IG during the face-to-face. And then the hope is maybe we can co-locate at Google's facilities during that week as well. Dave Longley is on the queue, but after Dave speaks, David Longley is on the queue, but after Longley speaks, if David Ezell could kind of respond to that, that'd be great.
Right. I was on the queue to just say it seems like we could have the task force, the official task force, be doing the interviews with the people. My understanding was that the task force was really supposed to start up to be sort of neutral and do that sort of work. I don't see why we couldn't ask to have the task force be ratified and then have the official task force be doing the interviews and so forth.
Yeah. Did you have a response, Manu, or do you want me to go ahead? I wanted to say sort of what Dave's saying, which is I kind of understand what Ian is trying to get. So let me – I don't want to take up the time with these kinds of logistics, but there is an IG meeting on Monday, the 21st. The next IG meeting will most likely be the 11th of January. So if we don't approve the task force on the 21st, it would be really good to think we could approve the task force on the 11th. And in the meantime, if it seems like it's in the plan for you to talk to those people, would you be talking to them before January 11th?
No, we wouldn't. And that's the downside of the waiting. I don't think we'd approve the task force until like mid-February. If we want to do all these interviews before we get, you know, final buy-in on the problem statement, all that kind of stuff. So there's
I won't take up any more time on this. I have a call with Ian today. To me, because I don't see the problem space as clearly as he does. It kind of seems it seems like, well, you form a task force and you do work. And it's almost like he's got some other thing. I apologize for that. I will try to get you a clear answer. And Manu, maybe you and I can circle back around and make sure we have sort of a crisp idea of what's going to happen. Because I don't think waiting until the face-to-face meeting at the end of February to even approve the task force does not seem like the right thing.
Yeah, I agree. The only reason we're, you know, entertaining that is because W3C management or W3C staff asked us for it, but it might have just been Ian. It might have been soft ask instead of a hard ask.
He may have changed his mind too. So I'll drop it. Done.
Okay. Eric, to answer your question, what's the advantage of going to task force versus working group? There is no option right now to go to working group. We have to build a case for working group, and that's what the task force does. So that's just the, you know, a task force builds the case for why W3C can add value, or if they can, and how they should structure the work and what we should focus on and all that kind of stuff. So it's working group is not the next step. Task force is the next step. Okay, so having said all of that, do folks feel like they would much rather do folks feel like we have enough buy-in and consensus at this point on the proposal for the web payments IG to just vote on it so that the task force is formed? That doesn't mean, you know, we can make it very clear that that doesn't mean that everything is set in stone. We still have interviews to go through, and if the interviews show us that we should go in a different direction, we will certainly be open to that and do that. So one way to do this is to propose that the task force is approved at the next Web Payments IG meeting, with the understanding that we still have a number of discussions that we need to have to see whether or not the problem statement is accurate and whether or not we're picking the right set of work to do. So is there any support, does anyone want to speak in support of approving the task force next Monday instead of waiting until mid-February to do it?
What are the drawbacks if it does not get approved? Do we just try again in January or February?
Yeah. I would imagine we'd just try again.
I've plused one, trying to get approval at the next meeting then.
Okay, and David is saying he's comfortable with saying we've done all the work except for the interviews, and we expect that to take time. Greg Kidd plus one, Brian Slenton plus one, Dan Burnett plus one for trying. All right, so I'm seeing a lot of plus ones for trying. Okay, all right, so let's resolve request that the web payments interest group approve the task, the verifiable claims task force with the caveat that we still need to do interviews before finalizing work and problem statements. Okay. Anyone disagree with that resolution that I put in there, wording or anything there? If you do, speak up. If not, we're going to move on. Okay. Next up, introduction of new participants. A couple of you are new. Actually, I think only Pat, maybe this might be the first time that Pat's on the call. But if you haven't been on the call before, in IRC, type out your name, the organization you're associated with, and what you hope this work is going to accomplish or why you think it's important. And we'll wait half a second for that. That's fine. Go ahead and type it in, Pat, and I'll move it to the right place in the minutes. We're going to move to the next topic, but type your intro out. Okay, first item up. We're continuing through the proposal. We are going to review the deliverables. Let me find, here's a link to the task force proposal. The other thing I've been meaning to notify the group of is that as we demonstrate that there's consensus in this group, the sections along with the modifications that we make before we approve it, are being slowly moved over to the Verifiable Claims Task Force webpage. So if you look at that webpage now, you should see everything that we have approved along with the changes. So this is what we have, the stuff that shows up on that page is the stuff that we have consensus for, or that we can demonstrate that we have consensus for. Okay, so The, let's see, verifiable claims, task force deliverables link is here towards the bottom. Our deliverables, to summarize, is we're going to do recorded interviews around problem statements. We have a list of people that we would like to invite in, people that have been critical of the work or not, you know, convinced that the work's important or that W3C should take it on. So we want to invite them in and see. We're going to have a set of questions that we're going to give them. We're going to have them look at the problem statement and just most likely spend an hour with them, each one of these people, to get a thorough analysis from them on the stuff that we're doing to make sure we're not missing anything. Many of these folks are key or have been key to a number of identity and credentialing initiatives in the past, and they're experts in their field, so we do want their input. Okay, so the first up on deliverables is the recorded interviews. We will hope to provide technology comparisons between things like OpenID Connect and SAML and the identity credential spec, just because that's the information that most everyone is going to need. We need to identify benefits to the financial, education, and healthcare industries. You should probably add government to that list as well. We are going to talk about the benefits towards the end of this call, just the preliminary set of them. We are going to create a use cases document, and then we may end up creating a vision document. We do have a vision document in the credential CG, and there's a question of whether or not that should be moved over as input to any chartering process or working group. So that's what this task force is responsible for doing. Once we create that material, the Web Payments IG will then create a charter and create a roadmap. They may do that with aid from this task force and the credential CG. So we may rough out, sketch out what that should look like, and the Web Payments Interest Group will socialize it among W3C member companies and so on and so forth. Okay, so those are the deliverables. Dan Burnett, I see you on the queue, so go ahead.
Yeah, you can see my question now, which is that as you were going through them, you said we're going to try to get comparison between the existing technologies you have there. Of course, these are listed as deliverables, so I guess all I'm really asking is, do we intend them to be our deliverables, or do we want to modify the wording?
Right. So I misspoke. I should not have said try. I should have said that they're mandatory that we create them, because we can't. You know, folks coming into this work are not going to be able to do a thorough comparison before. We need to do that work for people. It's one of the biggest questions that's asked, or first questions that's asked from those in the industry. You know, how is this any different from OpenID Connect, or how is this any different from SAML? So we need to document those answers. So sorry, I misspoke. I didn't mean try. I meant they're mandatory.
Okay,
Brian,
thank you. Brian
Sledden asks, does widely socialized mean something specific, or is it just the best effort? When we use the widely socialized terminology at W3C, we mean we try very hard to get input from the advisory committee, chairs of current working groups, just W3C membership in general. So widely socialized means we're going to write the charter, and then we're going to ask the AC, hey, What do you think about this? Does this seem like a good charter? Do you have any corrections to it? You know, so it's not a surprise when the charter vote comes across W3C advisory committee representatives. So there are 400 of them. More than likely, some of them will have comments on what we should and shouldn't have in the charter. Did that answer your question, Brian? Okay, he's saying yes. Any questions or concerns about the deliverables as they stand right now? Does anyone feel anything's missing? We're overpromising, anything of that nature? Okay, then the proposal is going to be adopt the deliverables as is. Eric, give me 1 second. Deliverables. There's the link, Eric. Also note, Eric, that we say that one of the deliverables is a roadmap document with phases. Hopefully that addresses your concerns. Okay, so the proposal is adopt the deliverables in the VCTF wiki as they stand today. Okay, plus one, minus one, plus zero, if you agree or disagree.
And on my plus one, it's Richard. I don't have the IRC yet.
I got it. I got you. All right, unanimous approval. Okay, so that's resolved. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah. I do have one question, which is, when would a capabilities, so we have a use cases document, when would a capabilities document be created? Would that be post-charter, or what do we think?
That's a good point. I think it would be good to have a capabilities document, but so the capabilities, like the identity and credentialing capabilities, is already a part of the web payments interest groups capabilities document. And Pat, maybe you can talk a bit more about this, but my assumption was that the web payments interest group would naturally fill out that section of their capabilities document, and that would effectively become the verifiable claims / credentials capabilities document. So after David Ezell goes, Pat, maybe you've got some thoughts on that. Go ahead, David. David, you're muted if you're talking.
I was just going to agree with you, Manu. I was going to say that our desire is to have a single capabilities document across the entire activity so that anybody who is, you know, wants to know about web payments can look at the capabilities and they'll know basically in which directions the various working groups are running. Back to you, Pat.
Yeah, I think you guys set it up wonderfully. So, I mean, one of the reasons that the capabilities document in its current state within the IG was set up so that you could break out a section for specifically all the identity and credentials stuff. So this feels like a natural candidate for anybody on the task force that wants to chip in and help contribute to that section of the document. We're going to be spending some time on Monday's IG call talking about that, and then the goal would be to have that capabilities document rounded out, at least in a more fully formed version before we get to the February face-to-face meeting, so that to David Ezell's point, people really understand what's going on across the activity, which is a little bit hard to do now that there's multiple tracks kind of moving in parallel.
Yep. So I'm sure, Pat, you wouldn't turn down any help writing that section from this group.
I would love help. So if anybody is interested, please let me know, and I can get you pointed to the current version of the document. We can have a quick call if we need to.
Fantastic. Okay, Longley, does that answer your question, or is that?
Yep. Yep. Okay. Sounds good.
Okay. Great. Next up, milestones and timelines. So Eric's bringing up a good point about socializing the charters, in that if folks react very negatively to what we're doing, those folks are given a bit higher priority than the 25 plus people that have formed consensus around the problem statement. It's a part of the socialization aspect of it. It's a human engineering problem that doesn't seem to have a very good answer right now. Anyway, let's not dwell too much on that, because I don't know, unless there's a proposal on how to address that, and W3C has been searching for one for, two decades now. We should probably not spend too much time on that. Milestones and timelines is up next. Here's the link to milestones and timelines. So we've already had to change this because we're behind, mainly because it's taken much longer to spin up this task force than we had hoped. But the timeline is basically, month of November was spent discussing the proposal. Part of December is socializing the proposal and starting background research on deliverables. So after the call we have today, if we get approval on the proposal, I'm going to start sending out invitations to Brad Hill and Jeff Hodges and all those other folks to set up interviews with them. January is hopefully the task force will be established, and maybe by the next week it sounds like we're going to try to establish the task force. We're going to start drafting a skeleton charter for feedback. We're going to finalize some of the input documents for the working group. We may take some work from the Credential Fiji. In February, we're going to continue to publish all of our findings as we do interviews. So just like we publish minutes for this call, we're going to be publishing every single discussion that we have with Brad Hill and Jeff Hodges and whatnot as it happens. We're going to hope to finalize the input documents, and then there's this open question on whether or not we should co-locate with the Web Payments Interest Group meeting and the Web Payments Working Group meetings in San Francisco, February, the week of February 21st, at the Google San Francisco's at the Google San Francisco headquarters. March would be revising the documents based on any input from the face-to-face. The one great thing about face-to-faces is there's a flurry of activity and usually clear direction on what changes you want to make. In April, March and April timeframe, we would socialize the charter before the AC review so that the advisory committee, the W3C advisory committee, which is composed of 400 representatives from W3C's member organizations, so they're not surprised when the charter comes across their desk for a vote. And then by June at some point, we would submit a working group charter for approval at W3C. The front part of the timeline is very aggressive. The tail end of the timeline is a bit more leisurely. But unfortunately, as we all have experienced, these things take much longer than we want them to take. All that said, does anyone have any concerns about the milestones or the timelines or any of that stuff? Are we missing anything in the timeline? Is the timeline not aggressive enough? Okay, so the proposal is adopt the milestones and timeline as it stands today in the wiki. Shane, yes, there's Slack built into the tail end of that timeline. Go ahead, David.
I think Eric is sort of right here, which is it might be really helpful in here if you put some milestones like the face-to-face meeting and also the AC meeting in, when is it this year? March? When is the AC meeting?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I would imagine April timeframe.
Well, it's earlier than normal, but traditionally it's been in May, but they pulled it back. But see, and that is kind of a really important thing to be visible here. So I would say our face-to-face meeting and the AC meeting, you should probably just put a line on there, not with a deliverable, but with a just that it's.
So how about February 22nd face-to-face meeting is a hard date, like something
yep.
like that? Okay, all right.
Yep.
So I'll. All right, so February 22nd, let's see, week of February 21st, face-to-face meeting, hard date. And then the other one, does anyone know what the AC?
I'm looking it up.
Okay. And sorry, Eric, I had totally missed your comment in IRC. I see it now.
Cambridge, 26, 27 March.
Okay, so March 26th, 27th. Which Cambridge?
Massachusetts.
Okay,
yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, the link I put in says 20 and 22nd of March in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't have my glasses on. Sorry, guys.
Sorry, what was the date then?
The 20th and the 22nd of March.
20th. Yeah, I was blind. Sorry.
Okay, 20th through the 22nd. AC meeting, hard date. Any other? I think everything else in here is a soft date.
Right.
So the socialization should happen at the AC, David. Is that what you're saying?
Well, you know, the way we've typically done this is we've attempted to publish a charter and socialize it before the AC, and then probably give a brief presentation and say, here's what we told you, and we haven't really heard much from you, and everybody
okay.
goes away feeling happy. You know, it's kind of it's the opportunity to give people a last chance. It's better to give them a last chance to raise an objection at an AC meeting than it is to have them come to the microphone and say, I didn't see this and I didn't notice it.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
So absolutely. And I think you're absolutely right. And that's a good strategy. What that means for this group is we're just going to have to parallelize just about everything that we're doing. That's not a bad thing. It's just chaotic. And as long as everyone's a bit okay with the chaos, I've seen it turn out really well in the past, so there may be a lot of hand wringing, but I think it seems like a reasonable thing to stay at, especially since we have a lot of experience in this area. You know, it's not like we're just starting it up. We've got 20 plus people that have been working in this area for the last year and a half in a W3C community group. So I think we've got our stuff more together than just starting from a stand. Okay, I have added two hard dates in there, the February 21st meeting, face-to-face meeting in San Francisco, and the 20th meeting in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Any other modifications or changes to the timeline? Any other concerns about the timeline before we approve it? Okay, so the proposal is to adopt the milestones and timeline as it stands today in the wiki. I have made the changes. If you refresh your page, you should be able to see them. And Richard, I can plus or minus you if you want.
Plus me.
Okay, done. Okay, that is resolved. Next up on the agenda, a review of benefits for the stakeholders. This is not really, this was requested by W3C management. I don't see it as critical that we get it absolutely right with this pass, so keep that in mind as we go through it. We were asked, you know, it is confusing to folks. People don't really understand what the upsides are if we create this ecosystem that we're talking about in the proposal. So these are the here's the link, the benefits to the stakeholders that we've identified today. It doesn't mean that there aren't more benefits. These are just what we have right now. I would imagine that as the Verifiable Claims Task Force does its work and does the interviews, that we will identify more things and we will add to this list. Again, we're not trying to get a perfect list here. We're just trying to get a good enough list that we can circulate to other people to get feedback from. So with that said, I'm going to go through the list, try to go through the list quickly, and explain each benefit to make sure there's no disagreement, and we'll see how far we get here. This is what I was concerned would take the vast majority of the call today. Before we do that, David Azell, you're on the queue. And are muted.
Sorry. No problem with this list. Go through it. I would just say sight unseen, a really long list, even if everything's important, is probably not as effective as a 4 very sharp benefit list.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just an opinion. But anyway, go ahead.
Right. So just to respond really quickly, I absolutely agree with you. I had a very hard time figuring out what those 4 items were. Like, it feels like you mention one of them and you don't mention the other one and you're missing half of the benefits. So maybe there's a way to boil each one of these bullet points down into one sentence. The open question is, you know, whether we do that today or whether we do that later. I'd argue that maybe doing it later would be good because it's going to take quite a bit of time to craft the right sentence based on all these bullet points. What are your thoughts, David?
Well, I think that's, yeah, it's not something that we can do. It may not even be something we want to do in plenary. It's probably something that we should all agree that we trust you to do.
I would hope that the group should certainly formulate that. So let's see. I think what that means is we're going to have a call where we talk about, you know, someone is going to have to go through and take a shot at it, and then we'll discuss it.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's really what I was saying. We need something to shoot at. So if we come up with a list of 4, then people can come back and say why something that got taken off needs to go back.
Yep. Okay. All right. Okay. So with that said, Carla is asking, is there a desired number per main bullet point? I don't think so, mainly because there are more benefits for some stakeholders than there are for others. We're trying to hit the high notes for each stakeholder. And as you can see from that benefits on the list of the stakeholders, people like everyday citizens and just people in general have a lot of benefits, and that's really kind of where the W3C excels is as their quote unquote customer. The everyday person is their customer typically. Shane is saying we should try to ensure that this ties back to the problem statement. Yep, absolutely. Agreed. Okay, so let me, Carla, did that answer your question? Okay, yes. All right, so benefits to stakeholders. One of the stakeholders that we have added recently that made a lot of sense to do so is people in general. So these are, if you scroll up a little bit in the wiki, we define, you know, people as citizens, employees, professionals, aid recipients, like government aid recipients, legal guardians, property owners. These are all people. So benefits. One of them is no identity provider lock-in. They own their identity. They can move it where they want to. They have control over it. Second benefit is digital claims can be used in more than one location. Just like your driver's license can be used in more than one location, we want these digital claims to be able to be used in more than one location, meaning more than one website. We want the other benefit that we're chasing after is the ability to aggregate verifiable claims as cohesive digital identities. So maybe you get a digital driver's license from one organization and you get a law degree from another organization. You should be able to compose both of those things together to make richer statements about yourself. Hopefully that doesn't need more explanation. We want to provide privacy-enhanced sharing mechanisms, so it's up to the person to share information about themselves rather than it being shared without their knowledge or approval. We want people to have control of confidential information. Again, it's kind of a play off of that privacy-enhanced sharing mechanism. The elimination of repetitive input at websites, so having to type in your shipping address over and over and over again, or having to type in, you know, your email address over and over and over again, you should not have to do that. The reduction in the need to input personally identifiable information. You shouldn't have to put in your social security number on websites or your credit card number on websites or a variety of other secret numbers or your home address or things of that nature. So the benefit is you're not giving that information out to organizations where you have no idea what their security practices are. Better usability for, and the other thing we're after is better usability for sites that need to collect data to perform checks. So part of this is regulatory compliance. The other part of it has to do with accessibility for people with disabilities. So the ability for a person that is sight disabled or has a hard time doing input using their hands, that the benefit is that you have a credential that already has all that information in there that you can just send over in a single click or a single voice command or a blink of an eye versus having to manually enter that information in on a website that may not be ADA compliant. Okay, so those are the benefits, identified benefits for stakeholders. Are we missing anything? Does anyone see a benefit that we missed? That's obvious anyway.
Should something about lowering the cost of managing these things and acquiring these things and sharing these things, because, I mean, a lot of these kinds of certifications you can get, but you have to pay for it, to wait for it. So just a low-cost way of managing these things may be something to touch upon, but I'm not sure.
Do you have? Can you propose like some text or language?
I'll have to think about it.
Okay.
But I will.
You,
yeah.
Okay. All right. Think about that, and then we're going to circle back around
sure.
to it at the end. And then Eric, for your suggestion on identity provider benefits, try to wordsmith it so that we've got something to add to the bulleted list. And Eric, your concern might be covered by the first bullet point. It's a bit vague that it covers it, but I think it's kind of covered there. Okay. Any other comments or suggestions on benefits to people? All right. Moving on to issuers. Issuers are the credential issuers, or sorry, verifiable claims issuers are organizations or people that provide claims for other people to hold on to. Shane, is that common in IRC? Cost reductions through credential persistence and verifiability. Was that in relation to what Brian said, or is that another one you want to add? It is in response to what Brian said. Okay, Brian, let us know if that would be okay with you. Okay,
yep.
So it would. Okay, cost reductions through credential persistence and verifiability. We should not use the word credential. We should use verifiable claim. That's the only modification I'm making to it, and I'm adding it to the end, unless there are objections. Cost reductions through verifiable claim persistence and verifiability.
Maybe machine verifiability, just to highlight the fact that, I mean, because you can verify a credential via phone or something.
That's true. I will add machine verifiability. Okay, and Shane likes that change. All right, that's been added to the people section. All right, on to issuers. Benefits to issuers, credential issuers. These are organizations like the Department of Motor Vehicles, U.S. government, corporations, Walmart, Target, retailers, education providers, all those are issuers. Benefit is a level competitive playing field, not just a few super providers. So currently there are some credential issuers like, for example, the organizations that do credit scores or background checks. There are only two or three of them in the market. The proposal is that there should be thousands of them, or at least the competitive playing field should be leveled so that other participants can enter easily, and standards are one way to do that. The other benefit to issuers is that they can participate in a broader ecosystem as a result of common tooling to issue verifiable claims. This, of course, means that we want the verifiable claims that issuers issue to be composable, and because they are composable, the ecosystem is much more powerful than if any one issuer tried to own an entire market. So you can have issuers issuing education, verifiable education credentials, and doing healthcare credentials, and those can be combined together to either get other credentials or prove that you have a proper level of education and health to do something. The third bullet point is avoiding vendor-specific solutions and lock-in. Issuers can retool their issuing platforms more easily, that when there are standards in place, than if they had bought into a completely proprietary system, which is the standard today. Any other benefits to issuers? Anything else that is an upside to an issuer that we missed? Okay, moving on to consumers. Consumers are, verifiable claim consumers are organizations that accept verifiable claims to provide some good or service to the holder of that verifiable claim. So these organizations include retailers accepting loyalty cards, financial industry folks accepting proof of identity, maybe from, one of their own organizations, governments accepting proof to divvy out aid, and, of course, education institutions requesting verifiable claims to prove a certain level of education, so to take a class, go to graduate school, things of that nature. We have three listed right now. Before I start on those, Longley, do you want to go ahead? You're on the queue.
Yeah, I just thought of another one for issuers, which is essentially there's a potential for reduced infrastructure needs because this is a user-centric system. There might be less of a need for issuers to stand up services that have to be contacted every time somebody wants to share a credential with some individual.
Okay, so let's shorten. What's the bullet point?
Potential for reduced infrastructure needs.
How about cost reductions through, potential for reduced infrastructure needs. Potential for reduced infrastructure needs. Anyone have any changes to that, any modifications?
Well, I think he also said due to user-centric focus.
Okay.
Just to explain where the infrastructure reduction is going to come from.
Okay. Carla, we are going to be revisiting these at a later date. So they don't need to be perfect. They just need to be good enough. Potential for reduced infrastructure needs due to user-centric focus. Any concerns? Changes? Okay, I've added that to issuers.
You might want to say architecture, user-centric architecture instead of focus.
Okay, I have to wait for the W3C site to let me edit.
yeah, I agree. Architecture makes more sense.
Okay, user-centric architecture. Okay, potential for reduced infrastructure needs due to user-centric architecture. All right, I've made that change in the editor. I haven't committed it yet. Okay, moving on to consumers, noting that we have 4 minutes left. Ability to participate. So consumers are, we already covered that. The ability to, the benefit is they have an ability to participate in a broader ecosystem resulting in common tooling to consume verifiable claims. So they don't need to do point solutions to integrate with various different providers. The hope is that all the providers provide verifiable claims in the same format and they can process them in much the same way. The only thing that varies is the business logic for the consumer, not the technology connection and infrastructure stuff. The other benefit to consumers is that they have a richer set of verifiable claims to consume, resulting in a better understanding of the customer, the ability to build a better picture of the customer before they grant access to that customer. I think there's some grammar issue with the second bullet point. Maybe not. The third bullet point under consumers is the increased ability to trust the authenticity of verifiable claims. So a consumer, has being able to pull all of this information together from different sources means that they can probably trust that information a bit more, especially if you can get the same claims about someone, like they live in a certain part of the world. If you get an assertion from the government and the assertion from a state government and an assertion from a corporation, that gives you much more, that gives you a higher level, a higher degree of trust in that information than if you were just receiving it from one source. Go ahead, Longley.
I was just going to say we could also say that there's also choice involved. You have increased choice in who you want to trust, and we might want to throw the word diversity in there as well because that's kind of what you're talking about. There's greater diversity in trust.
Okay. Okay, so let's see, what's the change ability and choice? Increased ability and choice to trust authenticity of verifiable claims. Greater diversity and trust. Wordsmith, Longley, help.
Yeah, I'm typing something up.
Okay, while you type that, I'm going to jump on to the identity providers. Identity providers are the organizations, and it's starting to become pretty apparent that identity provider might be the wrong term. These are like identity storage services, identity agents, identity vaults. Those have all been thrown around. But for right now, identity providers are the organizations that hold on to your verifiable claims on your behalf. They route them to where they need to go, or at least they store them for you. So benefits to identity providers are level competitive playing fields, not just having a few providers. Again, the ability to participate in a broader ecosystem, meaning common tooling, which means that there could be companies where all they do is they do identity provision services for people, and they build, you know, the trust with their customers that they're the best place to store those claims. Other thing is that they could end up storing more higher stakes verifiable claims in an attempt to help their customers in an attempt to provide more value-added services. So basically, because you're storing potentially personally identifiable information with them, they can maybe help you get better rates on mortgages, loans, things of that nature, as long as you're okay with them making those suggestions to you. Eric, you had a suggestion on what we could add. Do you want it? Were you able to wordsmith that while we were talking? And he may have had a hard time. Okay, you will. You will now, or you will later when we revise these. Later. Okay. All right. So let me finalize, at least for this call, these benefits. The proposal is to adopt the benefits as they stand now in the wiki, with the understanding that we may come back and revise the list from time to time. Well, revise the list as we learn more over the next couple of months. Okay, plus one, minus one, plus zero, and then we're going to end the call. Okay, Eric, you're on the queue.
Manu, I know we're out of time, so maybe it's a bit topic for next week, or actually our, when we pick it up, or you and I could take it offline. I'm just not sure, are we in agreement as a group that this is only going to be talked about from a user perspective, not from a systematic perspective? User-centric, we've been using the word user-centric. So is that the sentiment of the group, or is that just one aspect of what we're driving at?
Well, I think the problem statement makes it clear that we're talking about a user-centric approach here, because there have already been service-centric approaches like OpenID Connect and, you know, login with Facebook and things like that. And I think what we're saying is that that's not a good scalable way of addressing this problem.
Because I was concerned that I thought I saw some concern in our previous meeting. It may have been the not last one, but the one prior, where we voted and there was still some conversation. Maybe I missed a consensus on that.
I think we have fairly strong consensus to state the problem, as there's currently no widely used user-centric standard for expressing and transacting verifiable claims. Like we had buy-in on that. We had buy-in on the user-centric versus service-centric architecture, and that kind of stuff. So I think we're talking about a user-centric approach here. I think that's the consensus of the group. And I want to be very careful that I don't think that's a bad thing. But yeah, we could talk more about it offline if you'd like. I'm going to resolve that. That's the end of the call. Our next call is going to be January 12th. So happy holidays to everyone. I hope everyone has a decent bit of downtime and rest and relaxation with the families. and we'll chat again in the new year. Thanks all. Bye.
Take care. Bye.